No, we're not. Get back in the box.
Oh, hey, Waples, just as a heads up, my internet was out literally 45 seconds ago. So hopefully this thing works great. We'll see.
All right, you going to leave that in the podcast, or are you just
going to... No, I'm definitely leaving that in the podcast. Oh. So if I'm recording this podcast and I disappear during the podcast, all the listeners, sorry.
It's a good thing we have Dungeon Lord Jay with us.
That's right. We have a guest.
He can carry your weight.
Yep.
Grumpy Dungeon Master Jay.
Yeah, he has topics, unlike me this week.
I have topics too.
Oh, aren't you special? See,
yeah, unlike you, who just goes LARPing all weekend and doesn't have topics, I actually got topics.
You probably had your topics middle of the week.
No,
well, I'm going to save these and make him look bad when we record.
No, well, let's do the intro, and then I'll tell you what topics I have.
We did the intro. That was it.
No, I'm Grumpy Dungeon Master Christopher.
And I'm Grumpy Dungeon Master Jay, and we have a special guest, returning guest.
I'm Grumpy Dungeon Master Dungeon Lord Jay. Boy, that's a title.
You're just adding things onto there now.
The third, Your Highness.
I'm Grumpy Jay Jr.
I recently introduced my players to an NPC, Hazim Alessandro Carmichael De La Cruz III. Let's just give him this.
You said you didn't have any topics.
I can always come up with topics, but introduced him with this huge long name and everything. And then they found out that his name wasn't like, he wasn't like the third one in the lineage. Like his last name was the third.
That actually reminds me of something that I wanted to talk about today. It's this idea that I just came up with and I wanted to run it by you guys. And it's on the same topic as what Jay was just talking about.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
So I was talking to one of my friends and we were playing the game that we shall be playing later. And they came up with a name for a character that was, oh man, what was it? It was Percival Storefront. That was his name, Storefront. So I started thinking about Percival Storefront. Who is this character? So I developed this entire plot, this entire story for this Storefront family, and I wanted to run it by you guys and see what you thought.
All right.
So, Percival Storefront is a goblin, right? And he owns a small, maybe magic shop or random, you know, bits and bobs shop, and it's called Storefront's Storefront. And he comes from a long line of storefronts, and they... it all dates back to their great-great-great-grandfather who first came to, like, Waterdeep or whatever city through, like, a Easter Island sort of experience where they were sort of a minority and they didn't have a common, you know, an English name, so they gave him the name Storefront. And the only job he could get was being a mannequin. So that's where they got the name Storefront. And you know, if you go up to Percival Storefront and say, "Oh, my great great grandfather was a mannequin, and he clawed his way from through society to develop Storefront Storefront." And my idea is that the first time the characters go to Storefront Storefront, it's Percival Storefront. He's just a goblin. It's a franchise. So any other storefront that you go to, it looks exactly the same. It looks exactly the same on the inside. And the owner is Percival Storefront, the exact same guy, except he's wearing a wig or is dressed in drag or something. And they're all related, like Nurse Joy in Pokemon. Where it looks like the same guy, but he's dressed in drag or in a wig or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah, I've seen that trope in a lot of places. I've always liked it. Yeah, I've always liked it.
You've done it before, Jay?
Yeah. So first off, one thing I want to add is his great 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 grandfather's name was Perry Storefront.
Okay.
Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, oh, they're all P names. All of them are P names, for sure, yeah.
Also, another thing, there was a story that I came across yesterday online. Apparently, some guy dressed up and stood in a storefront like last week as a mannequin until the store closed just to steal jewelry.
Oh my God.
This really happened.
Wow.
But yeah, so I haven't done the exact trope of, you know, having the same looking person in a wig, in a different outfit. You know.
Right, right.
But I have done the, I had a magic shop that was called Thorbald's that my players could shop at. And if they went to any major city, there was always a Thorbald's there. And they would walk in, and it was literally the same store. He was just a wizard who had created a pocket dimension, and he just had doors in these cities. They could just walk into a store anywhere.
That is very similar to what I was thinking.
That's that can be traced back to, not saying you trace it back to there, but that, like, Howl's from Howl's Moving Castle, he had that same gimmick.
Yeah, yeah.
Where all his storefronts basically opened up into his moving castle.
Right.
There was an episode of Avatar: The Last Airbender where they go to a city, like a floating city, or I guess more a town, and there was one vendor there, and all he would do is duck behind the counter and swap hats, but he never acknowledged the joke.
Yes.
Right.
The other thing I have done, so my character that I played for a long time, very high level sorcerer named Mikhail, he ran a bar and brothel and inn type place that became a chain throughout the world called Slickbacks. And if you ever went to a Slickbacks, there was always a simulacrum Mikhail standing behind the bar.
Oh, so cool.
So, you know, because he was powerful enough, he had just created a whole ton of himself, and every one of them just a powerful ass wizard running behind the bar.
Yep, they used that in Baldur's Gate 3, actually.
Did they?
Yeah.
Huh.
The wizard that we murdered?
Yes.
He had his
you're right. Well, that was not a simulacrum. That was an illusion. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was a more powerful illusion.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Like it was sort of programmed like almost like a computer program to answer questions in certain ways and do certain things.
Yeah. I mean, they're all over the place. I mean,
but so storefronts, I love it.
Thank you. I put barely any effort into it whatsoever.
Well, I like it more too because you went off the old idea where everyone was named after their profession. You know?
yes, exactly.
Like that's a lost thing nowadays. No one's named after what they do for work.
Yeah, when we were driving back from LARP this past weekend, I found a great way for naming characters or NPCs or anything. So we're driving along the interstate, and there's a sign up, you know, telling us what the next couple of towns are, like Gaffney, Blacksburg. So I'm like, well, that's just a great name. So now anytime you're driving along, you know, it might say Lincoln, Chicago. But there's a name. Got it. Perfect. First name, last name.
Lincoln, Chicago is a good name.
If you're a private investigator, that is a fantastic
My name. First thought was private investigator.
Yeah, like that. That's a Cthulhu character right there.
For sure.
Yeah, names are the worst thing for me. Like, I can't, for the life of me, ever get a name. Like, so when I'm typing up a module or something like that, and I don't know the names of the people that I'm going to use, I just basically start typing in asterisk, 11111. **, and like that's my shorthand for the first character that I need a name. And so I'll write the story and I'll have everything out, like **111 talks to **2222, and they have to go kill the boss **333, and that way I can do a quick find and replace at the end and just swap them out, because for me sometimes the characters don't matter, and that's not a good thing, you know. But I can interchange them with whatever I want most of the times. But that's not really good advice. Don't follow that.
Definitely don't follow my advice on this stuff. If I have time to, like, if I'm creating NPCs or whatever, I'll just go to fantasynamegenerator.com and just look up names and pin them on them. If I'm in the middle of it and my players are like, what's this random farmer's name? His fucking name is Steve. Okay.
Yeah.
Guys, I gotta tell you, it is so funny that we are talking about this in such depth, because that is the literal game that I have prepared for you guys.
Oh boy.
That is the literal game that I have prepared, is naming NPCs. I'm not joking.
God.
And you guys are talking about how bad you are at it, and I am not joking. I seriously have it. I'm standing here listening to you guys talk about how bad you are at it, and I have a whole game prepared.
maybe we should play the game first and just get it over with. Because we're probably going to do terrible at this.
I can't believe this. This is fantastic. I mean, it's very thematic. I guess we have a theme for the episode, huh?
Yeah.
Your name is Little Bitch.
The name is Fail.
Do you guys want to just get it out of the way?
Yeah, sure. Let's do the game first.
I'm down.
I've
pulled up. I'm already cheating. I've already pulled up Google Maps. I'm just ready.
Okay, well, I guess let's just go ahead and get into it. This is a game that I like to call Random Name Generator.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So there's a couple of, like, we're going to do the first round. So there's no competition here. I just want us to, like, have fun.
Perfect. So
I think you both can pick a name for this character, or you can do one at a time. It's up to you guys how you want to do that.
Okay.
I like the idea of us each throwing a name out there.
Okay, that's cool. So for number one, I'm going to describe a character, and then you guys give him a name. And there's a second part to the game where I name the name and you describe the character.
Okay.
Cool. All right, so for number one, it is a middle-aged male lightfoot halfling painter with long, straight purple hair. He talks super loud and is possessed by an evil spirit who makes his commissioned portraits look like dead people. What's his name?
I got one. What about you, Chris? He's Googling something right now, I bet you.
No,
he's got the generator up.
I'm going to go with Endeavor Lavenderfoot.
Ooh,
that's not bad.
That's not bad at all.
Not too bad. I'm going to go with Sam Riegel.
Oh my God.
Because that is absolutely a fucking character he would play.
Oh my God. That's hilarious. Okay. So for number two, it is a male Aarakocra innkeeper that looks like a peacock. He is pompous and wears a lot of fake jewelry, and was cursed with were-tiger lycanthropy.
I'm
you
good.
First, Jay.
His name is Cinnamon.
Cinnamon!
Yep, because he's a peacock.
Yep.
There's a whole story behind this one, but I'll tell it later in the podcast or off air.
I'm going to go with Asmodeus Fowl.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
I'm not giving any special name for the were-tiger or he's a peacock, just a generic bird name.
It's good.
Yeah.
Okay, so you guys aren't too bad at this. Come on, you guys are coming up with good ones.
Mine are all jokes, though.
Hey, they're joke characters, to be honest. Okay.
It's a lot easier naming things when you're given the character. I think a lot of times, too, if you're not given any descriptors, come up with a male innkeeper's name. Steve.
Right.
Yep. Steve, Dave, Bob. That's all of my NPCs.
Boblin the Goblin. That's yep. literally yep. all I ever have.
I'm pretty sure we talked about this last time you were on here.
Okay. An elderly female gnome who is the secretary to the town mayor, who wears her white hair in an extremely tight bun. She has a thick French accent and is secretly a devil worshipping cannibal.
Icky Vicky. What is she? Is she a garbage pail kid?
Yeah.
The player characters walked up to her and the secretary to the town mayor, and they say, "Oh, hey, what's your name?" Icky Vicky.
Yeah, it's in that voice, exactly. Her short name is Fuzzy Fuzzlump. I can't give you the full gnomish name because we don't have 6 hours. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Awesome. Okay. A female fire genasi who is a cleric to Oryl the Frost Maiden, who has a thick southern accent and is being constantly psychologically tortured by a crazed leprechaun.
Huh. That's an interesting one. Yeah, I got a name for it.
Hold on a second. I look something up real quick.
Random name generator.
Yeah.
No.
Come on. Do. Yep.
Iso the Dying Ember.
Oh, well, that's like a real name.
Yeah. Oddly enough, I have what I would consider a real name for this one. This is not a joke name for once. The character's name would be Winter Ash. Because following Arl while being a fire genasi is just fucking wild.
Yeah, so what I went with is there's something called a cool flame. It's like a cold flame, but it's so hot that it's cold if you touch it.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like your hand is freezing, but in fact, it's burning off immediately. And in order to get that heat generated from it, you have to burn isopropyl alcohol to get to that level of heat. Hence the ISO part. That's where
that is awesome.
Yeah. Well done.
Yeah, that was really good, guys. All right.
And
so
honestly, that's whenever I go for names, like I said, I have to know the character that I'm going to have done. And then I'll basically look up science terms until I figure out their names. Unless it's something like the bunny that runs the inn in Glide Sky Ruse, when I just call, oh, it's just Sugar Plum the bunny, you know.
Yeah, their last name is Fuzzyfoot.
Sugar Plum Fuzzyfoot.
I have the feeling that the second half of this game is going to be much, much harder than the first.
Really?
I think so, yeah. Because coming up with a name, like, I can throw just things out there and it'll stick.
Well, for this one, we are in the second half now. So for this one, I have a name and you must describe what you think of as the character. For this one, his name is Professor Assman.
Professor Assman.
Yeah, which is spelled Assman.
Really?
Yeah, that's his name.
Okay.
So he's a proctologist in Waterdeep. I mean, done.
In his spare time, he is a professional wrestler and looks a hell of a lot like the badass Billy Gunn.
Oh, dude, that's great. He's a proctologist and a wrestler. Oh my god.
Proctologist by day, wrestler by night.
Yeah, I think in this one we'll team up. Me and Chris get to work together perfect. On this.
No, that's fine. I love that. Yeah. Okay, so for the next one, it's Noodle and Doodle Wiffle Waffle.
Oh man, this is too easy. They're definitely gnomes. By the way, I have a player whose character's name is literally Noodle. He's been playing it for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years now, so... Noodle and Doodle, huh?
Yeah, Wiffle Waffle is their last name.
Wiffle Waffle, okay. Definitely gnomes. Probably wizards. Let's think about this. Yeah, they're definitely evokers. One of them probably only casts fire magic. The other one probably only casts ice magic. Sort of a duality there.
That's sick. You got anything to input there, Christopher?
Oh yeah, I'm making it up right now. All right, so Noodle Wiffle Waffle. First, I got to get the setting right. The setting is not a fantasy setting. This is a modern day setting.
Okay.
This is a modern day setting. There are two men that live in Alabama. one makes muffins and lives in a bakery. That's Noodle. Doodle is basically his brother. They call him Doodle because all he would do is just sit around and doodle, not like draw fancy things. He'd just play with his do, because they're from Alabama. They're allowed to play with their own poo.
Oh,
and
no wow.
questions it.
That is where your mind went.
Yep.
Jay well, yeah, had these fantastic ice magic, fire magic duality
yep.
gnome and brothers. And you have two hicks from Alabama playing with their poop.
Well, if you little story here. I actually live in Alabama, and about 3 to 4 miles from where I live, there's a store called Doodles, where they sell tires. That store has been there since I was a small child.
The irony.
All right, so Doodles, a guy that sells tires.
Yeah, he sells he sells tires. The other guy works in a bakery.
So, speaking of weird naming things, kind of on that same topic, there was a hole-in-the-wall restaurant that was only open Saturday and Sunday morning, okay? From, like, 6 to, like, 2, okay?
That's going to be good food.
It was good food. The guy that ran the restaurant, his name, his nickname, and what everyone associated him with and what he named his restaurant as was Poopies. Okay.
Jeez.
So he ran like this hole in the wall, like meat grill place called Poopies. And there was always a line to get in. He only worked those 2 days out of the week. Everyone came and got his food. Everyone loved it. It was like a hit in the fucking city that I grew up in. Everybody wanted to go to Poopies. Not a lot of people can. And I just still to this day, like, why did you name it Poopies? Why? Well, how'd you get the name Poopies? Like,
obviously it works for him.
I guess. I guess it does.
That's pretty close to the last name I would name a restaurant.
Poopies.
Like, you know, there's Poopies, shit stain, anything involving fecal matter is just not something you want to name a restaurant.
Hey, sweetie, where do you want to go for dinner tonight? I don't know. You feel like Poopies? Nah. How about Shit Stain? Nah. I had Shit Stain. How about Chipotle? No, I don't want to shit myself.
Shit Stain Steakhouse.
Yeah. Like, how about we go to Latrine's Pizza? Like, no, none of these are appropriate names for a restaurant.
Definitely not.
And if you're running a D&D campaign, I highly recommend you do not use any of those for any businesses.
All right, I'm going to make Shit Stain a legitimate business.
I'm ready. I'm ready.
Turn it's right Shit next, Stain around.
It's right next door to Storefront. Storefront.
I mean,
all right. Do you guys want to
speaking locally? The owners of Zenergy were trying to come up with a name for their new store that they were opening, which
they're
is
opening
now
a
Heroes.
New store?
This was a couple years ago. They landed on the name Heroes and Champions, and they wanted it to be basically a D&D like tavern where everyone came to play tabletop and Warhammer. Since being open, it's 100% just a Warhammer store.
Warhammer. Yeah. I just went there recently.
So, they're bouncing around names, and one of the names I actually pitched to him in a joking manner, but kind of like, that's actually would be a really good name, but very shitty if we did it. There's the big store here in Charleston is called the Green Dragon. Okay. And I was like, you know what? If you really want to win the naming war, you got to be like the Gold Dragon or the Bronze Dragon or some other kind of better metallic dragon. And just one up them, because then when people search for dragon, you're going to get both the ping for the Green Dragon and your store. It's also like the Gold Dragon or whatever.
And 7 Chinese restaurants.
And 7 Chinese restaurants. Well, there is a Chinese restaurant in the same like little parking place called Area. Williams Garden, which is like the most unique Chinese name for a food restaurant. It's not number one China. It's Williams Garden.
It didn't have the word dragon in there. So that's something.
So that's what I pitched for him. It's called the Gold Dragon for his store. But he's like, nah, I can't do that. I was like, yeah, you can.
Nah, that would just start a war. Don't need that.
I recently went to the new Green Dragon. They like moved to West Ashley.
Yeah.
And their floor is completely covered in like side by sides laid out grid style magic cards on like the face down, and they covered it with epoxy or some sort of glue or something to keep them all on the floor. And the entire floor is covered in magic cards.
That's I mentioned it in passing to Jay that they did that, which is, it is really cool. I also kind of wonder too, like, were those, are those just lands, or are they like expensive cards?
You know, like, they're not
really good cards, because if they're not really good cards, I mean,
I own enough magic cards that are worth pretty much nothing that I could coat my entire floor in them.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, I'm definitely not. That's way too much work. I'm not about to sit here and lay out a, you know, 1,000+ square feet of magic cards. Not happening.
Yeah, coward, you won't do it.
You're right, I won't. So, Dungeon Lord Jay, did you have more of those for us?
Hold on, real quick, before we jump further.
Yes.
There's a couple other store names that sell D&D in our area that are a pretty good name. Since we're talking about good name stores. So Zynergy is the one that I sponsor, get sponsored by us. Okay. And then we have Heroes and Champions. We have the Green Dragon. We have Hoodie Cat Lounge, which is.
That's a cool name. I would never think it sold gaming stuff, but it's a cool name.
It sells the gaming stuff, mostly game boards, but the DM that runs games there, they have like this little D&D room in the back, which is pretty nice. There's also the Owlbear Tavern.
What?
Yeah.
Where the hell is that?
That's up here in Somerville.
Isn't that copyrighted? Like, I don't think so. I thought so, but maybe not.
Well, like, definitely not now, because the OGL is in whatever state that it's in, that it's free for everybody to use.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, but there were certain things that were not open, like Mind Flayer and...
No, that stuff is in the text that they put out in Creative Commons. Creative Commons. That's in the text they put in the Creative Commons, so it's no longer theirs.
Okay.
I mean, they might be able to fight because maybe they didn't intend to, but because of the references to Waterdeep and Baldur's Gate, Mind Flayers, Owlbears, Beholders are all in the Creative Commons license now. So
I knew like Ravenloft was. I remember that one, and Strahd was in that name or in that thing, but I didn't realize Owlbear was and all these others.
I mean, plus, are going to be that big of dicks are going to come down on Owlbear Cafe?
Very unlikely, I mean, since they're not selling the same product.
I mean, they're selling D&D there.
Well, yeah, but it's...
And coffee. Yeah. Oh, well.
That's a pretty good marketing point. Isn't there another one nearby that's... They're like a gaming store. I don't think they sell D&D stuff.
There's Final Quest and a few others.
Final Quest. That's the one. I like that name.
I think my local game stores around here need to pick it up. Like, we've got Oxford Gaming Center, Bud's Place.
Bud's Place.
Yeah. Like, they're just the most generic name. If I heard of Bud's Place, I'm just going to think, oh, that's where a bunch of drunks go to, you know, to hang out at and you know, buy more booze. Like, I expect that's going to be a bar or something.
Right.
Yeah. In Virginia, there was a place called Atlantis Comics, and it was the tabletop RPG store. And I never kind of got why they didn't sell comics there.
Yeah.
Just tabletop and gaming stuff.
It may have started as a comic store
and
transitioned over.
Like, who sells comics anymore? No one.
Yeah.
Yeah, not most of the comic shops have closed up. There's one place within about I know of one place in about 45 minutes from here that actually sells comics. And then there's Second and Charles around here sells it, but Second and Charles is an offshoot of Books a Million.
Okay.
Like they resell. Basically, you can trade in books and comics and games and stuff.
Oh, cool. Well, that's kind of cool. I never heard of that before.
They're in South Carolina. There's one in Greenville.
What's it called again? I'm sorry.
Second and Charles. Yeah, Second and Charles. Gotcha. Yeah, they're a chain. Obviously, it's like I said, it's an offshoot of Books a Million, but they're all over the place in the Southeast.
Cool.
Yep.
Yeah, since all bookstores are dead forever.
Dude, seriously.
Except for reselling bookstores like that one. They do very well.
I don't know what it is, man. Like, I miss, like, going into Barnes & Nobles to buy books and find stuff was cool at one point in time. But now it just, like, you go in there and just bombarded with just a bunch of shit. And
pop
there's
figures.
A thousand books and pop figures and everything else. And, like,
toys and all kinds of stuff.
I still have that nostalgia in my heart for Walden books way the fuck back when.
Yeah.
You don't even know Walden books, do you?
No.
Not old enough, Jesus. That's where, so Walden Books was a big bookstore chain a la Books A Million or Barnes & Nobles. On that level, they were always in shopping malls, and that's where I bought my first Dungeons & Dragons stuff.
I miss shopping malls. Do you guys miss the 80s shopping mall?
I was a mall rat, so yes, I do.
You don't count, DLJ. You're too young
shopping malls. I was about to say, but by the time I was old enough, they wouldn't even allow teenagers in the mall because there was all kinds of, let's say, violence.
Violence.
Sounds like you live in a rough neighborhood.
That's
I mean, that being said, there's waffle houses on every corner around here. Violence is, that's where that's at, not
listen,
in bookstores.
I have two on the street that I live on within walking distance of each other, and I'm not joking.
No, I
waffle
believe
house is violence. Violence is waffle house.
Yeah, I have a waffle house a mile from here and a huddle house the other direction, a mile from here. Go ahead.
You think this would be a good strategy, like Waffle House and like maybe Huddle House or some other, you know, just pancake shop, basically just kind of reach out to the tabletop crowd, the board game crowd, and basically just like set up a section that's less sticky where everyone can come and play board games. I think that would make them some money.
They're not big enough though. Not the company. The company's plenty big enough to do that. But generally, when you build a Waffle House, you can seat like 12 people in it.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. And boy, howdy, do they seat 12 people in there?
Yep. And hope you. Yeah, they have to screw all the seats down, otherwise they get thrown at people.
At 2 o'clock in the morning.
All right, let's back it up. You had a couple more of the.
It's fine. Do you guys want to do one more to round it
off?
Yes,
one more.
We'll do one more.
All right. Do you guys want to do where you create the character, or do you want to do one where I list all the traits and you name it?
I want to name it.
Okay. This one is a unique one. That's why I want to save it for last. So this character is an annoyingly optimistic vigilante / superhero of Neverwinter, who wears bright neon bodysuits with a glowing green cape that uses illusory lights to blind and combat criminals.
Oh, I got a good one for this.
Unfortunately, the first thing that popped into my brain, and unfortunately this will never be able to come out, was I could just only think of our good friend Jesse and his character that he plays, Ari. And like, I don't know why, but he plays like this fey creature that goes around and just kills people. And when you started talking about this very positive person, he's like the most positive person that I know. And so my mind just went straight to his character that he plays, R.E. And that's the character.
R.E.
Yeah, like literally the letters R.E.
That's a good superhero logo, you know?
Yeah. My brain went a completely different direction when you mentioned superhero and just... The way that they blind people. So this character's name is Bubbles Light Bright.
Light Bright. That's good. Yeah, that's good. Here he comes, Bubbles Light Bright.
Yep. But nobody ever sees Bubbles Light Bright because, well, vigilante. So you know, they're blind and then they're dead. And that's it. No witnesses, no anything.
I love that. Fantastic. Yep. Well, that was it for my game, Random Name Generator.
I enjoyed that game. So far, you're 2 for 2. I've enjoyed both of the games you've run.
So what? I gotta know though, Jay. What's up with Cinnamon?
Oh, so okay. I am going to not do this story justice because it's been so many years ago, but I will do the best I can. So we were at LARP, and every year they hold a festival followed by a feast. And during right before feast or right after feast, they would hold an auction. And they would auction off, you know, awesome magic items and stuff. And one of the items that was being auctioned off one year was literally a golem that was shaped like a peacock. So it was literally a peacock golem. And its name was Cinnamon. And Cinnamon liked the former owner a lot, which was the Ogre Empress. But, you know, Cinnamon had to be sold off. And Cinnamon didn't like anybody else. So Cinnamon will not follow your orders, and Cinnamon definitely does not like you. And these were the words that the auctioneer was using. And the guy playing it is a friend of ours, Chris Beasley, who he was role-playing as Cinnamon, and he just mean-mugged the shit out of everybody the whole time.
Oh my God, he
you have to realize he's role playing a peacock, so he's fucking strutting around.
Like, I cannot imagine. That's amazing.
Yeah, like he's the king shit, and he walks up to the somebody sitting at that first table and just, you know, mean mugs them and goes peacock, and he sort of flinches at them, and you just see the person flinch away.
That is amazing.
Yes,
and the best part too is that he didn't really go peacock. He went peacock. And it caught everybody by surprise. So we had like 80 people like here for the auction, like waiting for this thing, and he's just doing all this, and it floored everybody. Everyone's mouth was open, and just we were just shocked by what just happened to us.
Yeah.
Like this is a real thing now.
to the fact that I am now telling this story 7 or 8 years later. Like
that's amazing.
Yeah.
So you guys have fun out there, huh?
Oh, it's so much fun. So much fun.
It's one of those things, like, it comes around every month, and you're like, oh, I don't want to fucking do that. I got to go out. It's going to be cold. It's going to get hot. I'm going to be all sweaty and blah, blah, blah. And, like, you don't want to do it, and then you go out there. And
I have to drive 6 hours.
I'm gonna drive. I got to go be personable to people. I can't just be a recluse in my basement and... Then you get out there and you have a tremendous amount of fun. And then they go, oh, this is why I did it. This is great. I can't wait to come back. And then it just repeats on a vicious cycle. You become addicted
endless,
to it.
Endless cycle.
It really is that way. It's one of those things of you get there, and the moment you're there, everything becomes better. Because that's 4-hour drive or 6-hour drive. Once you're on site, it's a whole other thing. And then you're hanging out with people that are fucking awesome. You have a great time. You get exercise, fresh air. By the point that you leave the site, you're so exhausted that it's almost like a runner's high. You know, mm-hmm. that drive home, man, your mind is just fucking going a million miles a minute. You just got ideas and things that you want to do. And then you get home back to normal life.
Yeah.
It is a very weird, like, state of being. And It's a lot of fun, but I am still sore right now. I'm so tired. I'm glad you're here to bounce off, because I wouldn't be able to function otherwise.
Well, at least you guys have fun. That's the point. That's the really all that matters.
Yeah. For anyone who is listening to us, who has any interest in playing Dungeons and Dragons in real life, AKA LARPing, shadowmoor.org. That's Shadowmoor is the game that we play. So feel free to look into it, and hey, come join us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they had to buy the name from Magic, Wizards and Magic had to buy the name from them.
They didn't have to buy the name, but they had to get permission. Yes.
Which they're going back to Lorwyn. So everyone's like, I can't wait for them to go back to Shadowmoor. And I'm sitting here thinking like, I don't know if they've reached out and talked to anybody yet. I don't know if they can go back to Shadowmoor.
I seriously doubt they would ever touch that again, simply because they had to get the rights to it. So
Yeah. So they might never go back to Shadowmoor in Magic the Gathering just because. Well,
they have the rights to do anything with Shadowmoor when it as it pertains to card games. Like that was the deal.
Okay.
So they could just do it. And, you know, I don't know that they would, but.
Well, they're going back to Lorwyn. So, I mean, Lorwyn's easy. There's no issue there.
Yeah. Assuming Magic the Gathering doesn't die before then.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely going to die. You linked today that they're going to start publishing Marvel Magic the Gathering cards.
Yes, Marvel superheroes Magic the Gathering cards are coming.
So, this is my honest question is, given that they're doing that, and like, fine, money printer go burr, make a bunch of money. I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit that Marvel is getting the Magic the Gathering treatment, okay? Their Universes Beyond shit has been amazingly successful. Everyone loved Lord of the Rings. Dungeons and Dragons was one.
Okay, let's be fair. Everyone didn't love Lord of the Rings. Everyone bought Lord of the Rings because you had a chance at pulling a $2 million card.
Yeah, whatever. So anyways, do you think they're going to do that with D&D?
What do you mean?
Are they going to start to basically go, oh shit, we're making so much money with this Universes Beyond shit, and D&D is struggling, so let's put the two and two together and start doing Universes Beyond D&D stuff. So Doctor Who campaign settings and X-Men campaign settings. Since they have the license for it.
I will not say that they won't, but you have to understand a lot of those other settings are already under licenses for other role-playing companies.
Most of them have expired.
I was going to say, I do not know the current status on those, but it has been very consistent over the years for other companies to be doing those licenses. Once all that stuff expires, I wouldn't be surprised. Sure. Why not?
Because I know Star Wars is... Fantasy Ground lost the Star Wars license. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So they took their Force and Destiny system. They have their own world and campaign setting now that no one's buying because it's not Star Wars. And Star Wars has moved on. Actually, they haven't made another Star Wars tabletop, have they? There was the conversion for the 5e one that guy did, but that wasn't official.
That was never official, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that Marvel is under license with somebody else right now.
I think Marvel is under license with Ravensburger right now, the guys that are doing Volcana.
Ravensburger is fucking huge. They're puzzle monsters.
Yeah. There's a lot of Marvel board games coming out, and like the Villainous and Disney board games and stuff like that. That's all Ravensburger.
It looks like Marvel actually just has their own role-playing game.
Yeah, but no one bought it.
Yeah, that may be the case, but that seems to be like it. I went to marvel.com and there's a role-playing game for sale. So.
Is it a 5e system?
No, it looks like D6s.
Oh, no one wants to play with D6s.
Shit, I do. I want to play Bridgetown, damn it.
That's different.
I want to play Bridgetown, too.
You should order the book.
I want to play it real bad. I met that guy at the convention that I went to.
Oh, okay. David Schwimmer?
Yes, and I wanted to, or whatever his name is.
David Sheerdewan.
There you go. I knew it was something like that.
I was talking with him a little bit. We're going to try to set up a time to get him to play at Zenergy with the game and stuff. So we're working on it. So I'd like to actually play the game too.
That's something I would consider driving out there for.
Oh, you won't come down for the goddamn Grumpy Dungeon Master anniversary.
I want to play real fucking full bad. Of people.
Yeah, I want to play pretty bad too.
Yeah, but the problem is you wanted me to fucking DM that thing, and I don't want to.
You don't have to DM, but you need to be here to sign books and shit.
Wait, we're signing books? We don't have any books. Not yet.
I'm working on
that.
When you
get books,
too.
I'll get them signed.
Yeah, see?
So yeah, let me know.
Jerk.
I don't like driving 6 hours. Full, actually, it's more than that, I think, to your place. 7.
Yeah, just come here and get the pop figure I have for you.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Hey, wait, no, I brought stuff to the LARP for you. You get to bring it to LARP for me.
Yeah, I actually was sitting in my car today, and I had both a Death Watch book and the Legends of Lore book with me.
Yeah.
And I was like, which one do I want to read and talk about today on the podcast? And I read the Legends of Lore one instead of the Death Watch book.
I actually kind of would like that Legends and Lore book after getting a very brief preview at your place or in your vehicle of it. Like, that looks like something I would be really interested in because I'm super interested generally in the history of D&D. And I know it focuses more on the current stuff, but I still am interested in it.
Yeah, it's all about the 5th edition release. And so far, it's really only talked about the cool, awesome stuff that they did and how successful everything was and blah, 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 blah. There hasn't been like, oh, and then things took a turn for the worse. And there's been like behind the scenes talk in the book yet, which has been very disappointing. They've kind of said, oh, now I went through chapter 1 and 2 today and they talked about how they released the core books and the starter set and they linked it up with Adventures League and how basically things exploded with Critical Role and Big Bang Theory and Stranger Things. And they kind of campaigned off of that. And then this boom happened where people were talking about playing D&D and popular culture. And they had this boom. So they released Temple of Elemental Evil again as
Princes of the Apocalypse.
Princes of the Apocalypse. Yeah, that's right. And then they were like, okay, so let's continue this further. So we did Out of the Abyss to bring back all the big bad gods and stuff like that, and how they then went straight to the giants and how they based that off of stuff from second edition. And so they're talking about like what's influenced the books that they wrote in fifth edition.
Cool.
But they're not talking about any of the process behind it. And it's a lot of pictures. Like there'll be like a half a page of data and then like 3 pages of pictures.
I mean that book is obviously a coffee table book. Like
it is a coffee table book, yeah. I was hoping it'd be a little bit more. So, like, if you want a coffee table book with a lot of nice pictures and shit, it's definitely it. But I'm hoping for a little bit more behind-the-scenes talk about things, and that's not happening so far. But, like I said, I bought it without really knowing what it was. But so far, it's been interesting. It's been nice seeing.
How long do you know about how much it covers? Like, how
all of fifth
modern
edition,
it gets?
All of 5th edition up until Wilds of the Witchlight.
Oh, really? I'm very interested to see what they have to say about Descent into Avernus, because I know it's got kind of a bumpy sort of story behind it, I guess.
I mean,
from what I understand.
Yeah, there was a bit of drama in the creation of that, and you know the linkage between that and Baldur's Gate 3 and a bunch of other things. But I'll let you know when I get to there. I've been talking about it on the podcast. So, like, my current part that I'm talking about now is they're just talking about how great everything was and how they moved on to the next book and what Chris Perkins said about that, you know. And it really hasn't been very useful knowledge. That isn't something that like, oh yeah, we had this problem during development and had to change our ideas. It's all been like, hey, we read this in second edition, we're like, hey, that would work for fifth edition, so we did it.
Right.
I mean, I got a stack of modules if they wanted to, you know, just start releasing them for 5e every so often.
Yeah,
my complaint is there's not enough books. Well, fuck it, there's so much stuff out there to copy and steal.
Yeah, and like they're talking about how like the last thing of the chapter that I read was how they released Volos, and how they basically, you know, they're like, okay, we're gonna make Volo's Guide to Monsters. We're gonna base it off all the other Volo's Guides that existed, and they did, and it was a great success. And we brought Volo into fifth edition. Okay, cool. Then why did you?
Seems like a lot of patting themselves on the back.
It? Yeah, it's a lot of patting yourself on them on the back. Like, why didn't you do anything else with Volo? why was the next monster book board in Canaan? Was there a problem between you and Ed Greenwood? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
I want to know that stuff.
Yeah, and they also released the... that was when they first started with the special edition covers for the books. And, like, Volos was the first one of those, but it was actually limited and hard to get. Like, they were... I think you had to order a certain amount. I don't know the exact number, but you had to order a certain amount of the normal books just to get the new book or to get the alternate cover book. So if you look that book up on eBay, minimum's like around $300 because there's not a ton of that cover out there. But when you look at all the later covers, the price just keeps getting lower and lower the further along that it gets. And a lot of that, I would assume, is because they just started mass printing the alternate cover ones too.
Yeah.
And now really they're not even going to print books anymore.
Good luck with your game surviving.
Yeah, dude, seriously. You heard that they like terminated with Penguin Random House and are now going to start publishing their own stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that
was a distribution thing, not a publishing thing, I thought.
Sure.
Yeah, that's not terrible. Their plan is they're going to move all the books and stuff and move all the book distribution in-house. And part of that is, again, Watsy's big plan about being a $2 billion industry in 5 years and how they've basically failed doing that. They're trying to basically make sure all the money is just in them and they're doing all, they're centralizing all their activities.
You can make more money by piecing things out to companies that actually know how to do that kind of stuff. They don't seem to realize that. Like, why would you want to try to build your own distribution network nearly from scratch when there are already companies that you can just pay to do it for you?
Right.
Who already have that? They already have that infrastructure.
Well, I know why. So I watched this whole video about it, and apparently, now this is from a video, so I don't know all of the information, but from what I understand, when Penguin Random House, they buy the books from Wizards and distribute them. And when they distribute these books, they can do it at a cheaper price. You can buy a book from a D&D book from Walmart cheaper than you can buy it from the Wizards of the Coast website. And they're like cutting out the middleman. They're like, screw that. You're going to have to pay $60 for this book and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, I don't see that working. I really don't see that working in their favor. Marvel tried to do that shit in the 90s, and it literally bankrupted them.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Well, they seem to be doing fine now.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's good. But, you know, when you see all these Marvel movies, you have the Disney ones, and then you have the Sony ones, and then there's, I don't remember who, there's a third company out there that owns rights.
Universal.
Is it Universal? Yeah.
And Universal owns the right to the Hulk. That's why there hasn't been a single Hulk movie. Yeah.
But that's because of what Marvel tried to do in the 90s. And they found out not quickly enough that, you know, it cost a lot of money. And if you try to cut out those middlemen, they can just do it cheaper. It's better.
Yeah. It's part of their strategy. Maybe part of it's because they already have all the printing stuff because they moved all the Magic the Gathering stuff in-house and all the publishing's there. And they may own those publishing printing studios, so they may just be doing it better. And again, because 5th edition is supposed to, or 5. or sorry, D and Done is supposed to basically be the online VTT D&D, and they may just do very little physical publishing.
And it will kill their game if they don't put the books out there where people can get access to them. You know, if you take the whole thing online only, you're done. Like, it will not work.
We'll see. Oh, they'll see, at least.
Yeah.
They're going to try.
I mean, it's not going to affect me one way or the other than it's a thing that we all love. We all love Dungeons and Dragons, and I'm saying it in quotations. You know, it's what most people, that's what they started with. That's what they want to play. So we all want to see it do well. And unfortunately, it's owned by a billion-dollar company that doesn't give a shit about the product. They just want to make money.
They got $1 billion on the brain.
And it really felt like, when I first got into D&D, it really felt like something that was just so unique. And it's, you build your own sort of special connection with this game. And everyone has a deep sort of connection to the game. And now it's like Marvel movies.
Yes, that's a very apt description of it. That's what it feels like, at least to me.
Yeah, and also the fact, too, that everything is a freaking multiverse. Like, I'm just so tired of the multiverse shit.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of dig the multiverse thing. I know you guys have very strong opinions about some things.
Well, it was fine. It was fine until, like, all right. So, I'm tired of multiverses. Like, I get it's a thing. I get that DC is capitalized on it. But Marvel's going through a big thing with it. D&D is going through a big thing with it. Everything is a multiverse. Everything's a multiverse within a multiverse. I was watching a video today about the Incredible Hulk's, one of his latest runs.
I knew you were going to talk about this on here.
Yeah.
Do it.
The current story of Incredible Hulk is that this could be the very top end cliff notes. So Hulk goes on his journey into basically hell. Okay. And he fights the being called the One Below All. And the One Below All is essentially the devil, for lack of a better descriptive term. Okay. It's not really the devil. Mephisto is the devil in the Marvel
Mephisto.
Universe.
Mephisto. Yeah, yeah.
But the one above all is essentially the God creator being. Okay. The One Below All is what happens when the one above all hulks out. Okay. He's basically this giant gamma creature of indestructible power and mayhem, and just causes bad things to happen. So Hulk goes through literal hell in this Lovecraftian nightmare experience where he fights the devil and eventually overcomes the one below all. But surprise, something stayed behind in the Hulk psyche. Okay. Bruce Banner had an episode after fighting the one below all where he like destroyed El Paso and murdered everybody there as the Hulk. Okay. And he then basically decided that he was going to stop the Hulk and stop everything. So he basically talked with Doctor Strange to have the Hulk put in a separate dimension in his mind. And then he set up this like weird psychic illusion that he could basically co-pilot the Hulk's body, and they call it Starship Hulk. All right. Where he basically takes the Hulk psyche and submits it to all these atrocities and monsters and big bad guys. And he has like this lever that's 1 through 9. And so like one, it's like him just fighting General Ross, and 5 is him fighting the X-Men. 6 is him fighting all the Marvel zombies, and he just gets higher and higher. 7 was like all the Asgardian gods. 8 was all the celestial beings like Thanos and Galactus, whatnot. And right. Essentially, just it ramps him up, and because his fuel is he's never stopping. He's always getting angry and angry. He's always getting stronger and stronger. And Bruce Banner is able to basically take that, a lot of Iron Man tech, and fly throughout the universe, multiverse, and fight other variants of Hulks to find like the original gamma start of the Hulk. Finds another Bruce Banner who's been throwing Hulks into a void, where they're all just basically creating this Hulk multiverse. And like, I'm watching this shit happen in this video today, and I was just like, I'm so fucking done with multiverses.
Absolutely wild.
And I'm just like, this is just a fucking nightmare. I don't want any more Hulks. Shit, huh? It's all canon shit. Yeah.
Oh Jesus.
And so now there's a thing called the Titan Hulk, which is the Hulk that can destroy multiverses in a punch. And like the scaling is just
Have you ever heard of power creep?
Yeah.
So and now we have Planescape, which is just all multiverses. We got
I am done with the multiverse.
Let us clear this up. So the Planescape is not a multiverse.
Let me stop you right there. Because they claim it as their own multiverse.
They can call it whatever the fuck.
In their own fucking book, they call it a multiverse. So you can't.
Yeah, but like.
So.
Planescape is awesome.
Now, okay, I'm not going to say D&D is not a multiverse simply because they decided to bring in, once they tied it with Magic the Gathering and you could play at that point, it sort of jumped the shark. But it's been like the ability to travel between worlds has been there since first edition.
Right. Like,
that's not new. That's never.
I don't care. Demons come from somewhere.
Yeah,
I was reading the Legend and Lore book, and they said that they wanted to establish a D&D multiverse.
Oh yeah, I'm sure they want.
I'm
to do
done.
That. Yeah,
with multiverses.
Look, we all are. I don't. I run a very, very well. It's always been a very insular campaign. Like I don't generally do travel between worlds and stuff. I've very, very recently broken through that and tied it into one of my players' own campaigns. But we've been kind of doing that for a little while now. But it's still just very insular. It's, you know, his campaign, my campaign, they're sort of vaguely tied together.
If you tell me multiverse,
no, I
say you ran out of ideas.
Yeah. Yeah. No, multiverse is not usually a fan of that.
I'm just done with multiverse.
Planescape is like the world that connects all of the outer planes. It's just outer planes.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
If you have access, if you have Stygia, if you have the Nine Hells, if you have Arborea, Mechanus, if you have all of these in your setting, then they're just, you just go to Planescape to get to them. Like that's right. that's all it is.
And you go to Ravnica, then you go to Sphaeros, now you're talking about multiverse again. Then you go to New York in 1992 Iron Man variant.
No, that's D20 modern. It's not the same thing.
I don't know. They're coming out with MTG Marvels. They might just tie it in and just say, hey, here's the Marvel Adventures campaign setting.
I would be so upset.
Oh, you better be upset. You get ready for us.
I'm not ready. I'm not ready.
Yeah, you know, because they want this company to be huge, they will do their best to tie it into even bigger companies, aka Disney. They're not, you know. Next thing you know, you're going to have a Disney version of Dungeons and Dragons coming out where you can fight Jafar and
Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, a la Kingdom Hearts. Prince John. Oh my God.
Oh God.
Prince John apparently is just a tabaxi. Who knew?
Leonin.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I'm so tired of all that crap. And it's just like, I haven't bought any of the Critical Role books. Like I know that it's great material, and I know that it's fantastically written, and I am envious and jealous of Matt Mercer and everything that he's doing. And if I could wake up and just have his level of creativity and fame, I fucking would, just so I could do more D&D.
Absolutely.
Stuff.
Absolutely.
But I'm not going to buy your fucking Critical Role system. I don't care about buying another world of things. I don't want to buy fucking X-Men crossover books. Shit, I don't know. I bought the Lord of the Rings Magic the Gathering cards.
I'm a little bitch. I like new settings. I like different settings. I like to see the rule systems. I do have some interest in Daggerheart or whatever it was that was coming out, but it's not one I would ever really dive into. I might buy the book.
Sure, to take a look at it.
Right.
I think that's honestly my sort of stance on it too, is I'll check something out to steal it and put it in my D&D game.
Yeah.
Because I come here to play D&D, guys. You know what I mean? Like, yes, I would love to try out other systems. If someone had my experience level with a different system and was like, here, let me sit down and walk you through how to play this game, I would love that.
So have you heard about Pathfinder 2nd Edition?
I am more than willing to give it a shot. If someone can walk me through playing it, I would love to play.
If I'm ever out that way, we'll sit down and I will teach you. And I'll
teach you to my players.
Yeah, it's not super complicated. Not if you can learn 5e, you can learn it.
No, I would love to give it a shot.
Traitors.
Yes. yes.
Another one I want to try is Dungeon Crawl Classics.
Oh, I could teach you that one too.
I really want to play that game really bad.
It's so fucking good, man. I was looking through the critical tables in that game earlier because fighters have their own critical table, wizards have their own critical table, rogues, etc. They all sort of have their own critical tables, but certain types of enemies have their own crit tables too. So
what?
like dragons have their own fucking crit table.
Yo.
And let's just say they don't play around, man. There was one number on the crit table. I don't even remember what number it was. It was sort of middle of the chart where you are literally impaled on the dragon's spines, taking a stupid amount of damage. And if you survive, you're still alive, but bleeding to death as your organs begin failing. And it's detailing all of this shit out in there. On top of that, the dragon has to spend its next, like an action to remove you from its spines before it can make that attack again.
God. Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's fucking brutal.
I'm going to have to give that a whirl as well. Check that out.
Oh, I highly recommend it. Goodman Games, I just bought... They have a deal where you can pretty much... You get the entire core rule book, a set of dice, the DM screen, and a module. And it was like $75 or so.
Oh, wow. That's
like cool. it was a good deal. Because it's a big fucking book.
I want to try it out real bad.
Highly recommend it.
I'm not trying any new systems. I actually just got in my Kickstarter that I backed like 7,500 years ago. I got the second printing of Dark Tower. It actually came in the mail. I got all the boxes. The boxes are fucking huge, man. It's like four boxes, probably like the size of like any like big collector set worth of books and materials. The map that I have is this giant fucking like rubberized map that's like 4 foot in diameter, circle. Like it's
nice. Just,
it's an insane amount of just product to run this one game, and that's awesome. The rule book is thick as shit, and like. I remember the original game, the original Dark Tower game, you could basically just play it. And the machine did all the math and the rules for you, really. And so I'm very curious as to how much of this is done by the actual apparatus and how much of it is actually, you have to know what the rules are.
Yeah, I know we tried to play it last time I was down there, but I'm definitely up for trying out the new one whenever I'm out that way.
I'll come drive there for that. Not the anniversary, though.
Nope.
Hard line.
It's a lot of its timing of year, and you know that.
July.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of anniversary,
right? You always hold it on my birthday weekend. You got to stop doing that.
Come down for your birthday weekend.
I'm always doing stuff here on my birthday.
There's nothing to do in Alabama.
Yeah.
Except your cousins.
Except play with your own shit at Poopies or whatever.
He couldn't help himself. He couldn't help himself.
Just come down here for your birthday. They'll celebrate your birthday down here. Anyways. I was thinking about the anniversary module for next year. It costs quite a bit of money to print out giant size color maps for all the tables and stuff like that, especially since I'm not asking for any upfront fee for people to participate in the competition. I was kind of thinking, like, how can I create some kind of modular dungeon that I could just write once and then basically have a number of tables that I could just roll out and, like, print out these same things and laminate them and just use them year after year after year and basically just make a different dungeon each time I have the anniversary instead of having to write a whole brand new module.
That's easy. Just make a dungeon and then just... Yeah, you lay out the dungeon. Yeah, you just lay out the dungeon and then change the rooms.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah. So it would just basically be a list of rooms and a table. But that's a lot of combat encounters and not really like social encounters that may not tie together well. So like I'm thinking a little bit more high level of it. Like I know the math and mechanics behind what I want to do. Like that wouldn't be hard. But how do I give it a spin to make it actually interesting that would that people would want to play this multiple times, you know, and, you know, buy this and purchase this and then basically sit down like, OK, let's roll a quick dungeon real quick with this system and, you know, roll it out and it has all the social encounters and would actually make thematic sense, you know, as it kind of go through. Like if you've ever played House on the Haunted Hill and they did the Streets of Baldur's Gate as well, the game as well, too.
Right. Like, 50 different missions that take place in this thing.
Yeah. Like that's something along those lines, but have it actually be quick and easy to set up and run, you know? So I've been kind of thinking of that and like how to make that work. So other than just a table full of rooms, what are your guys' thoughts?
The way you're describing it, it doesn't sound that hard or complicated to do. I still like just the very simplistic idea of you create your dungeon, you map it out, and altering those rooms to do whatever you want them to do is not a hard thing to do. You could write a whole bunch of adventures that all take place on that same map. And then just, you know, have those to pick from. Like once they're written, it's done. It's over. You have the map already.
Yeah.
I mean, because you're thinking of it in terms of like House on the Hill.
Yeah. From what I understand, Christopher, what you're trying to do is create like a system as opposed to an adventure.
Yeah. But and House will have that system create the adventure for you.
Understood.
I mean, the 5e rule settings are just going to be there. You know, that's just the mechanics of how things run. Mm. That's fine. But how do you?
But a system of creating a dungeon.
Yeah, and have it be more than just a series of combat encounters, because you can make any random table, okay, full of just random combat encounters for things. That is not difficult, but that is not fun.
Well, it doesn't have to be all combat encounters. In a similar vein to the House on the Haunted Hill, like you could have this dungeon laid out where the players have to find these certain pieces in these certain rooms, you know, and then they have at that point you have to go and complete some other task somewhere else in the dungeon. It could be even a random location where they have to go to that wouldn't be pulled up until, you know, that moment. And once they obtain those original pieces, you could have them being chased by something that they can't beat. And so there's so many ways of actually doing that.
Yeah. So that's where my mind has been going and trying to think of a good ways to kind of handle all that and get that kind of worked through and set up. Cause I like writing the adventure and putting it out there for free for everybody. But I'm kind of want to do something a little bit more permanent versus just another adventure for the next anniversary.
Yep.
I mean, like we were saying before, I mean, the just printing of a map or even sections of a map that can be sort of fitted in different variations, you know, like four laminated pieces and they can be rotated or whatever, like the Tomb of Annihilation, right, where the room sort of spins and it creates a different way that you can path that you can go, and you just have it set for, okay, this is how we're going to run this year, and you have four little sheets for each table and they are arranged in a certain way every time you run the adventure, and it's the same dungeon, you just put different shit in the room.
yeah.
So that's what I've been thinking of. I've been trying to come up with those ideas and
it's a cool what idea,
exactly
actually.
To do. Yeah.
I mean, you could easily sell that too. Here's you 50 adventures that all take place on this map.
Yeah, that's a really, like, I would buy that.
Yeah, that's one of the things they did for the storytellers group for like Write Your First Adventure. Mm-hmm. Is they would give you the maps and they'd say, okay, write your adventure using this map.
Yeah,
and then like cool. Everyone wrote their adventure using that map. And then here I am like a jackass going, fuck your map. I'm gonna write my own draw my own map with hookers and blackjack.
So I'm in the process of creating a Dungeon Crawl Classics campaign, and I literally just went to Donjon, printed out a mega dungeon map. And like, I've got it here in front of me. It's 153 rooms on the first level. There will be multiple levels to this thing. And all I have to do now is just start writing out what's in the rooms.
Right.
You don't need to do that. Don John will populate the rooms for you.
I could. I'm not going to say I won't steal some ideas from there.
Right. But it's more fun to sort of, instead of random, you sort of feel out.
Like parts of the map, I know what they're going to be already. So right. I can't steal everything from Don John.
and then you could use an AI monster generator we found.
I don't know. I'm curious how AI would work pulling up Dungeon Crawl Classics monsters, because there's less of that online than Dungeons and Dragons.
It's true.
I mean, when I use the AI generator, just messing around with it and kind of goofing with it, it really wasn't that useful. Like, you say, hey, I want a big brutish character that, you know, swings a mace and hits real hard and is very hard to take down. He's like, oh, okay, well, here's a AC-19 monster that does that for you. And you're like, that's a good base, but that's not what I wanted, really. Like, it still lacks that.
You need that imagination. You gotta get creative. Yeah.
But soon. Give it another 5 years. Yourself.
Yeah.
The AI DMs that WotC are going to basically roll out with their VTT.
We'll see how that goes.
Finally, I'll get to play with a good DM. Jeez.
I know, right?
I mean, I love the idea of not having to always be the DM. So.
Sure.
No, you're always the DM until you die. You signed up for that role. You got the ticket. Got the.
Chris, you're talking about yourself. See, I actually do get to play sometimes.
Bullshit.
Not as much lately, but I don't mind DMing. It's not too bad.
I love it. It's my favorite thing.
Yeah, as long as I get to go hang out with my friends, that's what counts.
Yeah.
For friends? No.
On that note, I wanted to mention something. You know, I know it's getting late or whatever, but I wanted to mention something.
Sure.
We were talking about how, you know, D&D's changed and we have other systems now, and we've always had other systems, but we're experimenting with them and or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking, you know, if I was on a desert island or something with a group of my friends without any books, I could run D&D.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that it's cool that at least WotC can't take that from me. I know the rules as best that I, you know, I know a lot of the rules. I could make a character without even looking at the book, you know,
Yeah. Like, the thing is, though, it's not hard to create a system at all. And honestly, you would be, if you're stranded on an island, let's go with this hypothesis.
Sure.
Stranded on an island, no books, you're able to survive, and you actually have free time to play a tabletop game. And sure, you might know all of the rules to D&D and everything, but it's still probably simpler to to kind of create a system that utilizes just D6s,
sure,
as opposed to the D20s and the D6, you know, D4 or whatever the hell they are. I'm thinking DCCs, yep. But D12s. And
yes, D8s.
Yep, because D6 is such a it's less numbers. It's just easier. You only have so many. You only have to have so many pieces of coconut that you can
latch together.
Yeah.
Yep.
D20 or bust.
I just wanted to add that you know, at least WotC's not taking what I've learned away from me.
That is the reason that while I hate that it's going the way it is, I don't really care that it's going the way it is. Simply because there is Pathfinder, there is Daggerheart that's coming out, there's Shadowrun, there's Dungeon Crawl Classic. There's literally infinite systems out there that I can just pick and play.
And even if I don't like this 6th edition, I was thinking about that too. Even if I don't like the 6th edition, I know how to play D&D. Like, I don't need published adventures and stuff. I can do it.
Yeah. We like nearly everybody skipped 4th edition and just kept playing 3rd.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 3rd edition was fine. It worked great. So why would we swap to a new edition?
Because 4th edition was great.
Those words have never been uttered, but okay.
Except by me every time you dog it. It was a great system. Half the 5th edition is 4th edition.
Hey, I love board games.
Listen, guys, I just want to say that I use skill challenges almost every session, and it is my favorite D&D mechanic.
Yeah.
See, I like DCC's method of skills. It doesn't actually have skill challenges. It's if your character has a background where it makes sense that they would know how to do the skill, you can just do the skill.
Wow.
No, you get to roll at an advantage.
No need to roll to see if you know how to blacksmith that thing. Were you a blacksmith previously? Cool, you know how to blacksmith.
Hey, I'm real persuasive. I can just sell the DM on whatever I want. my character will bring used you to be a rogue.
If you let my character do this.
Yep. Hey, look, bribery on DMs, it's a thing.
It is a thing.
And I do love pancakes. And muffins. I mean, don't forget the muffins. Muffin. One of our friends' name, one of my players' name, nickname is Muffin, who we have to go play some video games with here very soon.
No, we don't. He's just going to get mad at me for murder-hobing everybody again.
No, it's Monday. It's 7 Days to Die night. We get to kill all the zombies.
Still going to murder-hobo everybody. That's what I do.
Oh, yeah, we're murder-hoboing zombies.
Man, I don't know. I just... one thing I did want to bring up, too, before we end... driving to the LARP, I got to listen to all the backlog stuff from Ed Greenwood that I haven't listened to in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he was talking about was he was answering a Q&A question. And the question was, is whether or not the directors consulted Ed Greenwood when they were making the D&D movie. And he said, no one really comes and consults me for anything with D&D anymore. And that made me really sad.
Makes me sad too.
But what he said was, is that, however, I do answer all my Q&As when it comes to Patreon, and there's a lot of stuff that WotC will have to run by me before I give them the flag on whether or not that's acceptable or not. I'm guessing that's why we don't have Volo's Guide to Anything Else.
Right.
And there's, I guess there's a big issue and everything like that with everything that TSR had made and published originally and trying to hide that from the media and stuff like that and hide that and get that all written out, which is quite sad to hear. But one thing he did say, though, is that the directors did go to his Twitch account or his Twitter account and ask him questions like just a normal person. You know, like a normal person just asking questions about the world and how things work. So even though he wasn't directly officially consulted and paid for the work, he did actually provide them with information on how to run things. That's what the word, he couldn't say what it was, but he knows that the directors did reach out to him through his Patreon and through Twitter. So I just found that just almost like a great gem that like, the guy who's the father of the Forgotten Realms is still out there answering questions.
Yeah, he's the man.
And as long as he stays healthy and alive, we can still have that last little sliver of original content that's out there. And
yep,
reading the Legend and Lore book, like I'm not saying what the fifth edition writers did wasn't original, but we've talked to some of them. They did original stuff, but it was a rehashing of Elemental Evil. It was a rehashing of Out of the Abyss. It was a rehashing of the Giants for all these books. And while the contents and names have changed, the originality of those original sources are just gone. And like Eberron is like the newest setting. It's still. That's the last like super new setting. Maybe Critical Role, you could say that is the newest one now.
Well, I don't know. I always felt like Eberron was the last new setting that they released.
Well, the first Critical Role book was a 5e WotC product.
I know.
Aware. But it's got a lot of 4th edition stuff in it. That's just renamed.
But 4th edition was great.
Oh God.
Mercer was originally running that setting in Pathfinder.
Right, that's true.
Which was which was 3.75. Third
edition,
D&D,
there you go, yeah.
I guess Magic the Gathering, that was one of the, it's the last setting other than that, the Critical Role one. So, but Eberron is the last of the OG settings.
Yeah. I mean, they won't ever publish another Dark Sun setting.
Yeah. They never touch that again, unfortunately, because it was the best setting of all of them.
I mean, the WotC settings that come out, like Ravnica and Theros, I like those, you know, and they have a lot of really good multiverses, you know,
I'm glad they released them. Yeah. Like I am.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind seeing Kamigawa as a setting, but
that would be cool, but that won't happen.
I don't know. It feels like at the same time, there's this giant tabletop renaissance. It also feels like things are just kind of being restricted more and more.
Only within D&D. You go outside of that and you got places like Bridgetown, which are fucking awesome.
God, I want to play that so bad.
All right. Well, I'll make sure we play Bridgetown. I can do that at least.
That's right. I've already got ideas for running my own Bridgetown game.
You better.
I do. I'll definitely be running a one or a two shot here after I finish my current Pathfinder game. So
you're coming to Charleston to run it?
I'm going to run it for my players here first, but I, if they enjoy it, I'd be willing to possibly run it for a couple of people there.
I'm coming.
All right. After I get to play.
No, you can't play anywhere. No more games.
Craig, they're not letting me play. Now he recording. Just wants to escape. Now recording.
Why aren't they getting my message?
Because no one speaks your language, Craig.
All right.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you guys. Dungeon Lord Jay, awesome as always to have you on here.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Carrying the show.
I appreciate you guys having me on, as always.
Yep. All right, guys. Take it easy. Bye, Craig.